welcome to another episode of Cathode Ray Mission. This is a show where we watch stuff on streaming during the pandemic, but as the pandemic winds down, hey, we're still here. We're still watching stuff on streaming. I am Will Scoville in Berkeley, California. With me, as always, via satellite in Oklahoma City, is Randy Heyer. Hey, Randy.
Hey, Will. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you? How have you been?
I'm doing well. It's actually a pretty mild day here.
Yeah, same here. I've had a good weekend so far, and it's a nice way to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so with us this week is a friend of mine. He used to live in the Bay Area. I used to work with him on at least one show.
Two
shows, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's in New York now doing his thing. He's part of Super Trash TV. We've had quite a few other Super Trash TV folks here. It is Seamus Calder. Hey, Seamus.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thank you for coming on. I've needed to have you on some of my podcasts for a long time, but you know, you live in New York and it's, you know, what, 3-4 hours difference?
3 hours, yeah.
From California. So, you know, it's much later over there now. But why don't you tell us about the movie that you brought to us this week?
Okay. So this is like, to me, premier blockbuster entertainment. And I do not mean like blockbuster films. I mean the video rental chain. Like, okay. I know for a fact that the first time I saw this was at like a sleepover when I was like, I guess I would be 13. And we were just like, Jet Li, Kung Fu, awesome. Sci-fi, the one. And this is a movie that I'm now watching Loki. I'm also like, y'all done ripped off Jet Li. Because it is a movie about, let's see, there's multiple timelines. And there's a police force that's making sure that they remain stable. And then let's see, there's a variance to it where if you murder yourself in another timeline, you become stronger. So there's also a Highlander.
Yes.
It's Highlander meets Time Cop.
Pretty much. Oh, God. Like, the set straight up looks like it is Time Cop.
Okay.
It does.
Hold on. We haven't said the name of the movie yet. So, Seamus, why don't you tell me? Yes. Okay. From 2001.
With Jet Li.
Yeah.
Jet Li, the one, is almost really what the movie's title is.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we have two Jet Lis.
Yep.
Fighting to be one Jet Li.
Indeed.
This is like the, what was it, Double Team? Was that the Jean-Claude Van Damme?
And there's also there's the Jackie Chan one too. I want to say Double Dragon, but it's not.
Twin Dragons?
Is maybe that it? They're twins. One's like a pianist. It's really good.
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's.
How does it compare to a really good Jackie Chan movie like, say, The Tuxedo?
Well, nothing compares to The Tuxedo because it's a goddamn masterpiece, obviously. But I will say it has some of the peak I'm Not Looking for Trouble Jackie Chan, especially when you have, because you have one of them who's supposed to not be able to fight. So it's like bumbling piano player Jackie Chan.
Yes.
But he's stuck in all the situations of like hardened gangster and knows how to fight Jackie Chan. So there's a lot of the like him falling over tables and being like, oh no. But like accidentally the table slides out perfectly and takes out the bad guy. So peak that. And then the Jackie who can fight does some like amazing stunts in it. He jumps through a car window perfectly one time.
Whew.
I got to check that out. It's Twin Dragons. Is that what that movie's called?
I think that's what it is.
I think
it's got to be better than Double Impact. I think you said Double Team earlier, but Double Impact.
Yeah, Double Impact. Which one is the one with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Rodman?
That's Double Team.
Okay.
That's Double Team.
And like, I'm thinking that
Jackie
maybe
Chan is Twin Dragons.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Awesome. Yeah, I'm thinking that JCVD plays twins in a few movies, but Double Impact is the one where he's literally doing like Parent Trap split screen shit with
And then I think one of the brothers dies, and it's like, because they get bored with that halfway through the movie, they're like, let's just get rid of one of them.
Well, no, that's one of them. I think that's Maximum Impact, maybe, or so. Wait, My head's spinning now. I'm reeling, thinking about. I know, but I swear to God that he plays twins in two movies, and you're right. One, they're not even in the same scene, really, and then one dies just so they don't have to deal with that. Anyway.
I mean, peak Jean-Claude Van Damme, it makes sense that they'd be like, we need to make multiple movies where he just plays off himself.
Yeah. He played twins again in his TV show, Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
This is true. Really?
Yeah. Well, he played another character that is his doppelganger, not his actual twin. Yeah. Anyway, God. The one.
He's one of the best actors to ever play with him, to act with himself.
Yeah, that's true. He's done it probably the most. Honestly, he's probably holds a record, Jean-Claude Van Damme, for playing twins in unrelated properties. Mm-hmm. Like, he's done it like 4 times. Like, who else has done that? And something that's not a sequel, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, eat shit, Winklevite.
So the one comes out in 2001. And so
it's Randy, very apparent.
Yeah. Randy, this and us watching kind of the Fantastic Four and, you know, kind of comparing that to the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans that came out around the same time and how they kind of both fit together, aesthetically. Mm-hmm. And then Shane is kind of going off, you know, again, I'm also watching Loki. And so, yeah, man,
God this bless is you like, guys.
This is like very much like a lot of the same shit. This feels like it could be the TVA from the Sam Raimi Fantastic Four universe, coming out in the same era. So it definitely has that aesthetic to it. It kind of has like a, you know, coming off of like a Judge Dredd or Super Mario Brothers or even like Total Recall type of aesthetic to it, which I really enjoy. But
I mean, this is also a movie that very, very clearly watched The Matrix.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like, God, so much bullet time.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of they have that Down with the Sickness plays at one point.
Yeah. I laughed. I mean, that was amazing. That's something that when I was like 17 when this came out, I never saw it until just now, till like when I just watched it or whatever last week. And there's no way that until now I could have appreciated that for how beautiful it was.
Yeah, it's a good cue because it's like
it was amazing.
That mouse explodes and it's like, oh wow!
And then before that, when Jet Li, it's like the reveal that Jet Li is there to kill himself or whatever. It starts playing Let the Bodies Hit the Floor by Drowning Pool. Whoa.
Yep.
I mean, God, it is a damn.
It is a relic. And then the other thing it shows that it really puts it in a period of time is opening scene, they pass a TV, and it's President Gore. And then later on in another universe, they pass another TV, and it's President Bush proposing universal health care.
Be great.
Yeah.
My favorite. Just on the music thing. Also, is I love when he's in like the ambulance and he's flicking through the radio stations and it's like country. Pop music, and then it's in 2000 metal, and then Delroy Lindo pulls a gun on him. He's like, and I finally found something I liked in this universe.
Yeah,
and I love that idea. Is that this multiverse cop turned evil, going around murdering versions of himself, also just fucking loves new metal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wasn't it the Foo Fighters, the song that he was like, I finally felt?
It might have been the Foo Fighters. You only hear like 10 seconds of it. Yeah. I couldn't figure out what it was.
Yeah, I got to check out the soundtrack on this. Oh, yeah, go ahead,
Rob. Oh, yeah. No, I just love, speaking of like another thing that makes it dated, like the casting, just having Delroy Lindo be a major character, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Like to
see him. You should have been nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Not for this. Not for the one, no. But for the Five Bloods.
Yeah.
But also, he also played two roles in this movie, and they were both great.
Oh, right. Yeah, he did. He came back in after his
so that Jason film. Statham can talk to a character who doesn't know him and be like, thank you for making me who I am.
Oh, my God.
He's like, I'm going to call the cops. Please leave.
And can we talk about Statham in this movie? Harry Statham, and also with his crazy accent that he's just like,
yeah,
struggling to hide his like real accent.
Just let him be British. He's like a future cop.
There's no reason for him to
just let him have a British dialect. Like his voice is cool.
I also thought the weirdest thing was, and I guess this is because he's got hair, so prior to him not being bald, which is like the transporter, I feel like nobody let him fight. And so like, I, you know, when I was a kid, didn't know who the hell this guy was, because previous to that, he'd been in like, what, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Yes.
He's a professional diver, so obviously didn't know who he was. But now it's like, I know who Statham is, and I didn't remember this movie perfectly, so I was like, oh, clearly he's going to have a fight scene. And then he doesn't. Like, I mean, he does, but it's much like all of the fight scenes that aren't Jet Li fighting himself, where it's really just like so many cuts quick. There's a gun and then there's not a gun. And then he does some cool things.
Yeah.
He catches his fist in his neck.
Oh, God. Yeah. A lot of this stuff, I really do kind of like the Highlander stuff where it's, you know, how he gets more powerful. So he's got like superpowers.
But dude, at the end, he literally says there can be only one. Like he says some iteration of there can be only one of us. Or he says something like that. It's like, what the fuck? Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, this is kind of, it almost is a little bit like, we have Highlander at home. You know? but no, I mean, it is its own thing though. And it does like the whole multiverse thing is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, of course I like the way they're doing it on Loki a lot more. But I do love kind of that scene at the beginning where they have him on trial and they're going through all the other iterations of Jet Li from the other universes and all his other names and stuff. And then naming the universes too, which I thought was cool. I don't know. I could have seen another movie set in this universe, maybe not with Jet Li, but like an even lower budget sequel or so, a direct-to-video sequel or something.
Well, yeah, dude.
I mean, Jet Li has apparently been teasing a sequel for a long time.
Oh, has he really?
He's basically just said, I'd love to do it again. That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be cool. I mean, I would love if they rebooted the, like, I mean, I typically don't want them to do a gritty reboot, but this would be awesome if they did, like, if they met in the middle with like, it was like Looper, that movie, that Rian Johnson movie, just make it a little bit like harder like that, you know, and a little bit more realistic. It would be awesome. It's like, this premise is, you could turn this into a TV show, another movie, like tons of movies. I mean, I love the premise of this movie, personally.
They're doing that
thing. It had perfect movie science, you know? Like,
He
does that thing where he's like, he folds up a magazine. He's like, the universe looks like this, space is like this.
Yes.
And he's just explaining it all to him. And at no point was it like, this is dumb. I was just like, yeah, I buy this.
Mm-hmm.
This works.
Yeah.
This is interesting to me. Great. Yeah. Cool. Let's go back to weird timey shit.
Yes. Absolutely. What were we going to say, Will?
Oh, I was just going to say that I think that Loki does have a lot of that stuff that, you know, it also ties into the Marvel shit, but really a lot of that good stuff from this movie is present in the Loki series right now. Just all fun time stuff, all the variant stuff, like, and Randy, you haven't seen it, but there is a point where he goes through this space where there's a whole bunch of different versions of himself fighting each other at one point. It's great. It's got the whole, like, time cops stuff. And Owen Wilson's part of that. He's fucking awesome in it.
And he doesn't say wow.
He doesn't. No, he doesn't. Or at least he hasn't yet.
He hasn't yet. But also, he's presented as a character who, like, knows everything. So the actor most famous for going wow is the character least likely to say it.
Right, right. but also, like, you don't have the Highlander stuff in the Loki series. So that's the kind of thing it's one thing it's missing is that, you know, the power transfer. And that I think really adds another dynamic to this movie of just like, you know, what the end goal is, like what he's trying to do is just to like kill all these guys so he can be the one. But you know, I don't. They let him live, so there is a space for, I don't know, the two.
Yeah.
They find out there's a third one left, and they got to team up.
Yep. Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Perfect. I mean, yeah, just like they could do anything with this.
Hey, look, if we can make 50-year-old Will Smith 20-year-old Will Smith, and we can make 250-year-old Jet Li fight 20-year-old Jet Li.
Oh, that's true. And we positively reviewed that movie on this very podcast.
Yes, we did.
We both
watched it.
We both liked it.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I mean, it's not a good movie. It's a fun movie.
But that's a good pull. Yeah, I mean, that's what pull. I
describe this as.
Yeah. No, totally. This movie, it's good because it sets up its own rules and then it doesn't break its rules. Mm-hmm. And it's like 90 minutes, too.
Yeah. Yep.
It's awesome.
It really doesn't take itself very seriously. Like,
no.
It sets itself up and then it kind of just has fun with the concept. I mean, for fuck's sakes, he crushes a police officer with two motorcycles.
That he swings his
battle club.
Yeah. That was in the trailer, I remember. And that was one of the things I was like, yeah, man, I could see myself going to see this movie. versus like, I remember when Underworld came out and it was like the shot of, was it Kate Beckinsale? Was she in that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And she does that thing where she shoots the hole in the floor with the machine guns.
Yes.
And I'm like,
oh, yeah.
And I'm like, ugh. And like, I worked at a video store at the time, and this guy came in telling me how cool that movie was going to be. And he mentioned that scene, and I was like, I don't care, dude. That was like,
yeah.
It takes too long to shoot a hole in the floor, and you're wasting
bullets. Dude. That scene rocks, man. But we covered the movie that it stole that from.
Oh, yeah. Nemesis did it much better, too. That was way cooler than...
We're going to... Dude, no. You've opened a can of worms now.
Oh, really?
We're going to cover an Underworld movie.
Oh, my God, dude.
I could never get into the Underworld movies.
I remember I was at Rasputin Records in San Francisco one time, and there's two guys just talking about that movie, and they were like, oh, that movie's so good. The framing of those shots. The framing. Oh, my... And they kept saying the framing. And I'm like...
You know what that... You know what that reminds me of? The morticians in The One.
Oh.
Who I think are the best part of the entire fucking movie.
One of them, is that Mark Borchardt?
It was
one of them? Oh, yes.
American movie, yeah. Yes.
They're talking about porn.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. I knew that Mark Borchardt was in this.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I was like, oh, God, I should see this movie.
Yeah. It was cool to see him in the movie. Yeah. I enjoyed that cameo.
Because I think he didn't really do much of anything else. He did this, and then he was on Letterman for a while doing remote segments, him and Mike Shane.
That's an American movie, right?
Yeah.
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 But, you know, other than that, like, he hadn't done much. He's kind of been around, but he hadn't done much. But this was, like, a big deal. I was like, oh, like, Mark Borchardt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the entire dialogue of that scene is another completely dating of the movie where they're complaining about renting porn.
Oh,
he's like, she only does girl. And he's like, I know you got to get in on that big old tranny porn. It's like, God, you could only make that joke in 2001.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's bad. That was a bad joke, guys.
Yeah.
It's like the guy in that one. It's one of the Friday the 13th. They have a mortician who's a. Just like reading porn and just talking about like the hot naked dead chick.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is why are morticians always weird in movies?
Yeah. And how Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, I think, has like the two guys driving the truck and they're like, do you ever have sex with the corpses or whatever? It's like, man, why are we doing this? Like,
they're also, they like, make
you
that.
You don't have to do, they don't have to speak. They can just be killed.
They can just get killed.
Yeah.
Well, the other movie that has that same discussion is What's Eating Gilbert Grape, because Crispin Glover plays a mortician in that movie, and they're just discussing someone's death.
Yeah, it's good, though, because...
Yeah, because it's Crispin Glover. And you know what? If you have Crispin Glover playing a mortician, I'm going to ask about him having sex with bodies.
It's so... But there is a movie... Well, I forgot the name of the movie where it is about... A mortician having sex with the bodies.
Hmm.
Well, there's also Reanimator.
There's also Reanimator, yeah.
Which is just many different things.
Yes.
Yeah. Cemetery Man kind of skirts the line of that, but yeah, that's not Cemetery straight Man. Up a man having sex with a corpse or
a woman, the one I'm thinking about is a woman who, and it's like, more of a drama, and it is all about her being a mortician and having sex with corpses.
Is it?
Oh, like, and there's the Keaton Winkler movie where Night Shift, where they're
morticians. Oh yes, yeah. Ron Howard movie, early Ron.
They
Howard.
Have sex with corpses in that.
They have sex in the corpse.
Yeah,
things.
They don't have sex with the corpses, but they're in the morgue.
Man,
yeah, they rent it out as like a prostitution spot.
Yeah, it's kind of like a risky business situation.
Yeah, and oh, okay. In Weekend at Bernie's, the lady she goes upstairs and has sex with his dead body, dude. Yep. That's dark and oh my god.
Weekend at Bernie's is an incredibly dark movie that for some reason is a comedy.
Yeah,
it's a children's classic kind. Like, isn't it like I watched it all the time?
Played as a family friendly movie, and it's about murder and like all this.
Just having sex with a corpse, and it's like a joke. It's like, I mean, in Clerks, it's a climatic joke, and it's like it's meant to be shocking and funny, and it is. But in Weekend at Bernie's,
let's not ignore that. It is funny.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and maybe in Weekend at Bernie's, I don't know. It's just ghoulish, though. You know, it's like.
Well, also, Weekend at Bernie's, the entire premise is that they get invited to this guy's beach house so that they can, like, I think it's he's gonna get them killed.
Yeah.
But then Bernie gets killed.
Yeah.
And instead of being like, we should go to the cops and leave, they're like, we need to pretend Bernie's alive so that these guys don't come and kill us.
Huh.
I don't like what realistic person their first instinct is. We should make sure this prop up this dead body and make sure everyone thinks he's alive and not leave this scene of a murder.
And then, okay. How far out was the second Weekend at Bernie's? Like,
oh, when he's a zombie.
Yeah. It was like, it was years later. And I was like, oh, you're waiting this long.
I love it like, as well.
I've never seen part two.
Great.
And I loved National Lampoon's Last Resort.
If you thought one made no sense.
Lump in there. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Last Resort. Yeah, I've seen that.
I lumped that in there with those movies. You know, it's like, it's,
yeah.
That's like a profoundly bad movie if you watch it when you're not a kid. But when you're like a 9, it's like, it's horny and fun, you know, like you just think it's good. Man.
Another like PG-13 movie. That maybe shouldn't be PG-13. It's the best
kind of PG-13.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just like this skirts the line a little bit, but it's not like a hard R. It would be a soft R.
Yeah,
and then they're just like, let's give it a PG-13. It's direct to video. So, but the one.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. You bring up morticians, man, and that's just a detour.
Let's talk about Carla Gugino. How do you say her last name?
Carla Gugino?
Gugino,
I think. That was just me confidently guessing.
Yeah.
I love her. Every time she pops up in something, I'm like, yes. She was in Son-in-Law. It's the first thing I saw her in. Yeah. And then she's in lots of, she's in Sin City.
She's in Gerald's Game. She's great in that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's all in all the Flanagan stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
we'll see her play multiple roles in this too. That's
fun.
She plays his wife, and then she plays a version of his wife that's living the exact same life before she met him.
Yeah. Well, she's also the one that has the mouse in her heel.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That
causes the explosion that gets one of the Jet Lis out of the chair.
For so long. can we take a moment before when we reference the Jet Lis, because you know there's the two we really need to mention, and I love is the difference in naming here. We have Eula, the evil one, who yells it out, I am Eula, and Gabe, the good one's name is Gabe. We have like super badass villain name versus Gabe, who according to IMDb it's Gabe Wong. But I don't think they ever say that. I think they just call him Gabe.
But no, I got to go back and talk about Carla
Gugino.
I don't know how old she is, but she always seems to look amazing in whatever she's in, no matter how old she is. Mm-hmm. She looks She's one of those people who she's going to be like 71 and she's going to look fantastic.
She looks the same. Yeah. Yeah, she's like an ageless vampire person.
I know. And it's you're like, right.
Actually, she's actually younger than I thought she was.
How old is she?
She's 49.
Oh, that's yeah. I mean, gosh, she looks great.
Damn,
so I just saw she has a new TV show. Son-in-law then she's got to be like 18 in the son-in-law.
Yeah, maybe when his son-in-law.
I mean, son-in-law, I'm glad you bring it up, is my personal favorite, Pauly Shore.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I would say so, too.
I'm a big In the Army Now fan.
That's a good one, too.
That was shot, of course, you know, Randy, that was shot at Fort Sill.
Yep.
And it's got Andy Dick, Dag, and Lori Petty in it. And I love Lori Petty, especially in that era. And also a 90s relic of the first time we were dancing in the desert. you know,
yeah,
under another bush.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love Sunlock is the recurring bit where he just reveals that he has different talents and he goes, took a minor, took a class. And that was literally like, I saw that when I was like 14 and I was like, oh, so that's what it's like going to college. Yep. You just learn random skills from taking a class.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
And that and like Jeremy Piven and PCU. It's just kind of like, oh, you can just like,
oh yeah,
take whatever you want. Yeah.
Dude, I saw Son-in-Law.
PCU, Jesus.
I saw Son-in-Law with my mom and dad, and we all like laughed our asses off.
Really?
Like, we had like such a good time at that freaking movie. I was so into the weasel, and I love Encino Man.
Love it.
In the Army Now, I saw in theaters for sure, and then Jury Duty. I don't think I got to see that in theaters, but I loved that movie too.
I've only seen that once. I haven't gone back and watched that one again.
I had to go to a summer camp when I was the summer after my freshman year in high school, and I couldn't sleep, and it was like 1 a.m. And at that time, I was under the assumption that anything airing on HBO after 1 a.m. would have nudity in it.
Yes.
And so I see R-rated Biodome playing, and I watched that whole movie waiting to see boobs.
No,
I did not.
No dice.
Nope.
But I left a Pauly Shore fan, and I talked about it a lot the first week I was at that away camp.
I remember bringing up Pauly Shore. I was working at a coffee shop, and I brought up Pauly Shore, and everyone I worked with was like 18 to 22, and I am in my 30s, and I'm like, oh, it's like that Pauly Shore movie, and they're like, who? And I was like, oh, boy.
You know, the weasel.
I feel like people younger now will only recognize Pauly Shore from Goofy Movie.
Oh yeah,
they would.
Leaning Tower of Cheese.
He's best. He is the weasel in that movie,
and he's the weasel in that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just watched Class Act for the first time recently, and he's in that. He's like he shows up as the weasel. Yeah.
You know who I'd love to see in. You know what? Actually, the upcoming Suicide Squad movie from James Gunn has a DC character named the Weasel, and I'm just now so disappointed it's not Pauly Shore.
God, I want to see. Pauly Shore had a small comeback during the Trump era because he started playing that. What's his name? Stephen Miller. Because he was,
that's perfect.
Yeah, it was perfect. He was so good, and he was really funny, and he was such a good sport about it. And it was like great to see Pauly Shore back. And the other thing, okay, here's another period where Pauly Shore cameo worked. I'm not a fan of the show Entourage, but there was a point in my life where I was watching it, and it's an episode. No.
Nobody's a fan of Entourage. You just watched Entourage.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen the whole.
So I saw the movie.
Me too.
I paid to see it.
I didn't go that far.
It was awful.
If they made another one, I would go see that too.
Exactly. Okay. I don't know. I can't explain it. I just see it.
But it's that episode where with Ralph Macchio in it, and it's like him and Johnny Drama have some sort of feud because they both got kicked out of. The Playboy Mansion years ago, and they were both arguing about who was at fault. And then at the end, they're like, okay, whose fault? Let's settle this. You did this. And then they both go, Pauly. And then cut to Pauly Shore being escorted out of the Playboy Mansion. And he's like, what'd I do? And I was like, I hadn't seen Pauly Shore in a long time up to that point. And it was just like, he shows up on screen. I'm like, oh my God, yes, perfect. It was like a perfect cameo for him.
I feel like Pauly Shore's up there as one of those guys that if you just have him show up randomly as Pauly Shore, I'm just like, perfect.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as like Steve Guttenberg showing up on Party Down. I'm just like, perfect.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. As himself. But you can have like, I would love to see Pauly Shore like being an adult. And it's just like, oh, you got a class with the weasel. Yeah. And he's like the professor. And he's like, the wacky
it's the professor. Son-in-law sequel where he's a professor.
Yes. Yes.
It should remake Dead Poets Society with him.
You know what? 80s. That would inspire me.
Seize the day, buddy.
Yeah. Cheese grindage.
They all stand up on the desk. Hey, buddy.
Someday, he's one of those guys that if somebody put him in a drama as like a deadbeat dad or something, he could like, that's how he's going to like claim new glory.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I could see him getting kind of like Matthew Lillard in like The Descendants when he played the guy George Clooney's wife was cheating on him with.
Yeah, totally.
Like totally like that kind of role. Just like random dramatic role, test the waters. And people are like, we like that. Let's put him in more shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or just make him, give him a JCVD movie, you know?
Yeah.
I mean a Jean-Claude Van Damme, I mean the movie JCVD, where it's just him playing himself in like a fictionalized
version. He did that.
Wait, I am Pauly Shore.
Yeah. Or something like Pauly Shore is dead or something like that.
Oh, Pauly Shore is dead.
Yeah.
But that was, do a better version of that, maybe.
Yeah, but it's a good movie.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
You know what I would love to see him in? Is a movie where he plays multiple versions of himself that need to kill each other to get their power.
Yeah.
Because every time he shows up, he goes, hey, buddy. And then,
you got the version of him now who's like, you know, kind of balding. And then you got the CGI de-aged version of him.
With the locks.
With the headband and like the flowing stuff and, you know, pre in the army now. Before he shaved his head.
Yeah.
I forgot the Will Smith movie. What's the name of the Will Smith movie?
Omega Man?
No. Gemini Man. Yeah.
Gemini Man.
So it's the,
I knew it was a symbol, a Greek letter. I got there.
Well, Gemini Man, Pauly Shore, and have him in a crazy chase sequence.
No, dude, it's not even an action movie. It's just them like trying to impress some random girl's family on a vacation.
Yeah. How about he has to go back in time to make sure that he doesn't fuck up his marriage because his life is falling apart. And he's like, goes back in time to when he meets.
Now we're talking about Happy Gilmore, Happy Madison produced, like
we're talking about movie. Click, kind of.
Yeah.
Oh God. What if it's,
that is what really is going to happen.
17 again, but it's 27 again. And it's just Pauly Shore. Today goes back in time to peak Pauly Shore.
Ooh.
And it's all just him acting as himself with no makeup behind the scenes on Biodome, trying to make it a good movie.
Oh, man. That'd be good.
Wow. Biodome.
These ideas aren't free, by the way, Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
When you hear them, you want producer credits.
I want that movie, but I want actors playing. Okay, you can have Tenacious D in there playing themselves, but like whatever Baldwin was in that movie, Steven.
The first joke will be that the first thing he does is he recasts Stephen Baldwin with William Baldwin.
No. You have another actor there playing Stephen Baldwin, and they keep calling him Stephen Baldwin, but it's like, I don't know, somebody else, Seth Rogen or something. Like,
yeah, somebody who looks nothing like
Stephen.
Oh no, you know what? You just get Adam Baldwin, who's not related to the Baldwin.
He's not a Baldwin.
You've got William Atherton as the bad guy in that movie. Man, I gotta watch that again.
Also, the girls in it are Joey Lauren Adam and Kylie Minogue.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never seen that
movie. Again, I remember this because of the disappointment of them not being naked in this movie when I was 14.
Yeah.
Can we jump back to the one?
Please.
I feel like we've kind of glossed over. We talked about the soundtrack. We talked about things. We haven't touched on that. I earnestly mean this. This is one of my favorite endings to a movie I have ever seen.
Yeah.
I cannot think of a better. Put it up there with the ending to Blade Runner. This shit is so fucking perfect. We get him showing up on the planet and they're like, you're going to be my bitch. He says, I am no one's bitch. You are mine because I am Yuna. And then fucking Last Resort kicks in as we get a crane, like pullback shot of him climbing up a pyramid, kicking people off. We get a Wilhelm scream in the middle of it because he kicks a guy off the whole structure.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And then we get the reason that this movie stuck with me for so long wasn't just that. It was the closure for Gary, where he goes back to a reality where he lands in the middle of the street, presumably in a timeline where the version of him has been murdered. Mm-hmm. He's dead. So he's in this completely new timeline, and he's just where he picks up the injured dog and he's able to take it into the veterinarian clinic and meet his wife again.
Yeah.
Which to me is such an existentially horrible result. Like, one, you're in a timeline where you're dead. You probably had a life and friends. Your name might not have even been Gary. You could very well be the fucking evil guy with the rat lady shoe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who knows? Also, why? You've lived a different life. It's like the timelines are created by little differences. I mean, you know, maybe this is the one where there's socialized healthcare and Al Gore's president or something. Who knows? But like, I just remember when I watched this movie, like I just, after I sat with it for a minute, everyone's talking like, oh, those fight scenes are cool, all that. And I was just like, how is that a happy ending? This seems miserable.
He's got to pretend his whole life.
Like his whole, that it's like, it's the Back to the Future conundrum. Uh-huh. Where it's like Marty wakes up and it's like, dude, you still have only the memories of your family being shitty, and now they're all like rich and successful. They could suck.
Yeah.
Like this dude, your brother's like a snooty business guy now. Like that kind of seems like your brother's a dick.
It's like he has no memories of what his family was. It's like, yeah, when we went out to that, I don't remember that.
And he's still dating, well, in the first one, it's not Elizabeth Shue, but later Elizabeth Shue. Like their entire relationship could have been different.
Yeah. And the fact that they're living in the same house, you know.
Also, it just always was weird to me that Biff is like, they're like not like somebody they even allow around their family. Like,
yeah.
You, the inciting incident of you guys getting together was he tried to rape your wife.
Yeah.
Why is he waxing your car?
Yeah. But also, if you like knocked him out in high school and then he was just totally like, you're the guy who like kicked his ass.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe he had a complete change of character because he got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
But that's some boys will
be. I'm your bitch
logic.
Now, Marty. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. God, we're getting so off topic on this one, but I think Thomas.
The multiverse theory, man. We're just going everywhere.
Thomas Wilson's performance as Biff. Underrated. Like we should celebrate
100%.
Yeah.
It's like the best part of the movie, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's also the only one who really has to act because in all three movies, he plays a completely different character.
Yes. Yeah. And he's awesome. Like old man Biff.
I love Griff. Biff.
And he's like, Griff was
Griff is so, because Griff is different than Biff.
Yeah. But Griff's the future one, right?
But he's still like a Tannen. You know, and he's just like, batter up.
Yeah.
And then we got Mad Dog Tannen, we get Donald Trump Biff. Like,
oh, God.
He does so much. And then even when you're doing flashback Biff in the first one to future Biff, where he's a little bitch, then you have flashback Biff in the second one, where you're actually seeing him through like his own life, as opposed to like the lens of Marty encountering him. It's a different performance. Yep. It's a different character. It's like, yeah, I will also say underrated, I think, is, I don't want to say completely, Crispin Glover in the first one.
Yeah.
It's the performance, I think, is heralded. People like it. But I've always maintained that right when he grabs Biff and he's, hey, you get your hands off her. And he can't even like finish it when he realizes it's Biff. And then he's like, get out of here, McFly. And he goes, no, Biff, you leave her alone.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's one of the most well-delivered lines ever. It's such a good, like, it captures the turning point of this complete coward.
Absolutely.
It's the second best Crispin Glover performance after that Friday the 13th.
And if I'm talking about real, we were just talking about this in the Discord, Randy, River's Edge.
River's Edge. Actually, River's Edge is great.
Yeah.
That whole movie is great, and Crispin Glover especially. You know that, and he's like got the long hair and the fucking leather jacket. And,
Perfect casting is just a complete fucking weirdo.
Love it.
He's great in that movie Twister from '89.
Oh yes,
like not the Oklahoma one
with Dylan McDermott and like Uma Thurman and yeah.
He's like, I wrote you a song, and it's like it's just like this drone with like heavy effects on it. It's, I don't know. It's great.
But, you know, I wrote notes about the one.
What'd you write down?
Okay, so first, the opening seems like a TV show. I don't remember what the context of that is. Oh, I said I feel bad for Dean Norris because he's in there in the beginning as the cop opening his cell, and he's doing the whole like, you're gonna be good, you're gonna be good, and he totally gets tricked. And I feel like I almost feel bad for Dean Norris because I feel like a lot of his career is him being a cop who thinks he knows what's going on, but then he doesn't.
Yeah,
I was hoping he was going to be in the movie a lot more, and then he just kind of isn't, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, I mean, he's in it about as much as he was in Total Recall.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see. I wrote, Jason Statham with hair is kind of its own review of the movie.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I think Statham with hair, and then Statham, I think he like embraced the baldness with like the Transporter and the Italian Job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's when, like, they let him do his thing. Yeah. He doesn't have to try to force an American accent.
Yeah.
And he's got one of the most, like, prominent Cockney accents in Hollywood.
Yeah, totally. He's full bald in the Lock, Stock, and Snatch. Mm-hmm. And then they brought him over here because people loved him in those movies, and rightfully so. And then they put hair on him and made him talk with, like, a New York accent or whatever he's doing in this movie. And then he's also doing the same shit in Ghosts of Mars.
Oh, really?
Yes. He has hair and talks with
a horrible
American accent in that movie, too. But then, the Italian Job and Transporter set the course. So.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, actually, that's kind of a thing, too, I think, about this movie, is that you have two actors who I think were kind of starting to become really big. Well, Jet Li was already pretty big in, like, Singapore.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And then he came over to America. And I think that the two things that really made this movie happen are Rush Hour and The Matrix.
Yeah.
And because there's so much in this that feels like a Western studio trying to recreate the like Sonny Chiba, Jackie Chan style fights without the like understanding of how they do them. Because like you have that hallway scene where they're fighting and it's all the guys are trying to arrest Gary. And he's like, I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to hurt you. And he's handcuffing them all onto the wheelchair. Hilarious.
Yeah.
And it's that's like a Jackie Chan bit. Mm-hmm. Also in that sequence, he like kicks a shotgun or he chucks it away and it flies into a vending machine and a bunch of Pepsis fly out. That's comedic gold. But so much of it felt like it was trying to be like a Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah.
But over edited where, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to even claim like I'm not stealing from, I think, every frame of painting talking about Jackie Chan and editing, mm-hmm. because I am. But there's this thing that they did. It was, Sammy Hung, Jackie Chan, like look at like Legend of the Drunken Master. What they'll do is when you're filming the fight, all action is three cuts. I'm going to describe this with no visual aid. So that's, you guys will see it, the listening audience won't, but it's like, so say like you punch somebody, you see them get punched.
Yep.
Then it's a really quick cut to another shot that's even closer of them getting punched again. And then you see the reaction. So it's these three quick cuts. Technically you see them get hit twice, but it still registers as the same hit. Mm-hmm. And that makes every impact feel cooler and like more, you know, more real. Whereas this, it's like, he goes in for like this cool punch and immediately cuts to the back of Jet. I mean, and part of that's because it's Jet Li fighting himself. But like, it'll be like a cool punch and then it immediately cuts to just like the back of somebody flying away.
Yeah.
And so I feel like Jackie Chan in his movies, his movies make him look like a better fighter than I think he is. Because I think he's just a much better like director and stunt coordinator and stuntman. Whereas I think Jet Li movies make him look like a worse fighter than he is. Cause in real life, he's an amazing fighter.
Yeah.
But I feel like all the American movies he's in, like Romeo Must Die, was it like Kiss of the Dragon or something? They always give him guns.
Yeah. And also it's like, this is an era where The Wire Fu was huge.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. It's right after Crouching Tiger.
Mm-hmm. And so it's just like everyone's on a wire and you got these big weird jumps and stuff. And of course the Matrix did that as well. But yeah, I do think that's one thing I did notice is that like, man, it's just like they have to cut around so much of like the big fight is him fighting himself. And it's just like having to cut around that. And it's like cutting around a double where you don't really get to see a well shot, well edited fight scene with Jet Li in this movie in the way that you get to see it in some of the other movies.
They like, they're augmenting the fights with like CG and stuff too in a way that they wouldn't really do after a while, but it reminded me of Blade 2, which is maybe the biggest offender for like Blade will jump in the air and become a video game character for like 5 seconds and stuff in that movie. And it sort of gave me that vibe. I mean, it's probably from the same year almost, you know?
Probably. Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't mind it, though. I thought this movie was... The thing I just kept thinking the whole time watching this movie was, this is such a good premise. I like this, but nobody care. Nobody will be mad if you redo this and it's bad or good or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, just redo this. I mean, I think... I like that
I think Marvel's doing a good job remaking it.
I do too.
More fight scenes.
Yeah, well, the fight scenes in that are like, that's the one weakest thing about the Loki show is the fight scenes are just not great. The story is wonderful, but like the fight scenes are just kind of like,
they're very quick.
Yeah. Hmm. So, cool. I think that's a good spot for a break. Y'all agree?
Let's take it to the big roundup.
Yeah, we'll be right back with that that big roundup.
I would rather have a day job than be a Pokemon master.
Han Solo is clearly more attractive than Indiana Jones.
I would take the Star Wars trilogy over the Matrix trilogy any time.
The Legend of Zelda versus Super Mario. Who's better in bed, Jafar or Gaston? And would Thanos masturbate with the Infinity Gauntlet or not? Every week, Nerd Rage the Great Debates brings you the funniest comics, writers, and podcasters to settle some of geekdom's most divisive topics. Find us on Spotify or wherever you find podcasts.
Hi, I'm Jacob.
And I'm Annie. Have you ever enjoyed a palaver?
Is it good to be the dog's dinner?
Who is this Bob, and why is he your uncle?
For the answers to all these questions, you'll have to listen to our podcast, Boo to a Goose, breaking down British and American expressions and idioms.
We use them, define them, and explain their history, all in a short, digestible format.
So go ahead and check out Boo to a Goose wherever you get your podcasts.
Cheerio!
That means goodbye.
Today, documentary films are experiencing a major renaissance, and for good reason. But why are audiences increasingly choosing fact over fiction?
Is it a dearth of realism, like endless comic book sequels and end-of-the-world action movies? Are viewers choosing authentic storytelling over spectacular visuals and far-fetched plots?
Or maybe it's because docs f***ing rule. Hi, I'm Parker Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And we host SupDoc.
We didn't go to film school. We're just two comedians that dork out on docs.
And since 2015, we've been recapping amazing documentaries with comedians, actors, and filmmakers like legendary comedians Dana Gould and Todd Glass.
Musicians like Yacht and Dan Deacon.
And even media stars like Jesse Thorne and Francesca Fiorentini.
The AV Club called us enlightening, and Boing Boing said, SupDoc is a great idea for a podcast.
So find us wherever you get your podcasts or join us at supdocpodcast.com.
And follow us on social media at SupDoc Podcast.
All right, we're back and we're ready for the big roundup. Seamus, on a 0 to 5 star scale, what would you give The One?
Okay, so I'm a firm believer that you have movies and you have films. And I think a film is like Citizen Kane or The Godfather, and you're like, this is a cinematic masterpiece, yada, yada, yada. And then there's a movie, and a movie is like Top Gun. Mm-hmm. Is it a great film? Probably not. Did I enjoy the shit out of it? Yes. Would I probably prefer to watch this on an afternoon? Yes. If it's on TBS, which it always will be, I'm going to watch it. So to me, The One, it's a solid 4. It's not, you can poke holes in it, but shut your brain off for an hour. It's an hour and a half of Jet Li fighting himself. It's incredibly quotable. It's such a period piece that, you know, especially if you grew up in that era, it's so like nostalgic and funny. It's got Jason Statham with hair. It's got Delroy Lindo. It has weird unintentional comedy. It's just an enjoyable movie. Like I can't, there's not really a fault in it. It's just a fun movie to watch. So yeah, I'd say a 4
stars for the one from Seamus. Randy, what do you got for this one?
Oh, Will Seamus, the one. Well, I wanted to also bring up, this is directed by James Wong, who directed Final Destination before this, and then Final Destination 3 after this. Final Destination 3 happens to be my favorite one of the series.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of those yet.
Three is the one, is that the NASCAR one?
That's 4. That's the Final Destination. 3 is the one that begins on the roller coaster.
Oh, the roller coaster one's dope.
Yeah, and it's just the most like crazy, but like, I don't know. I like 3 a lot. Anyway, I'm going to give the one 3.5 out of 5 stars. I thought it was pretty good. I was joking with my girlfriend. Okay, a little peek behind the curtain. I watched these movies last week because I thought we were doing this last weekend. And like on the 4th of July, I don't know why. I just thought we were. And so like I was joking with her about how like the plot of this evaporated from my mind like mere hours after it was done. And it kind of did. Like as we're talking about it now, I was like, oh yeah, all this like the motorcycles, that was cool. The main things I'm going to always remember is when the mouse explodes and like, oh, and it's like that, like, I lost my mind. I put that on Instagram. It's just like, that was insane. One of the best musical cues ever. And yeah, you're right. The ending was like over the top sci-fi crazy ending. It was like, whoa, this is weird, you know? And I don't know. And yeah, I think they could remake it. I'd love it if they made a little harder edged, like not a not fun version, but one that just had more, like more of a realistic future crime thing and better violence and stuff, you know, but still not losing the fun of what this is, I guess.
Yeah.
Like Looper, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, 3.5 for me. Will, what do you got for the one?
I think I'm going to also give it a 3.5. I kind of teetered back and forth. I'm in the same boat that the plot kind of evaporated from my brain after the first time I watched it. And so I watched it again and I was like, oh yeah. And because it is such a time capsule of like 2001, which is such a weird time in America. It has kind of like this leftover 90s feel to it as we're kind of transitioning into the new millennium. But it also has like hallmarks of like what is to come, you know, Jason Statham, lots of CGI, you know, kind of CGI fighting and stuff. And, you know, that just kind of continued to overtake these kinds of movies, which I think they got better over time. But you just got more of the same stuff. So, yeah, I think 3.5 is a pretty good. And again, yeah, Seamus, if it's on TBS, this is that's a perfect place for it. It's a great movie to drop in the middle of it and just kind of follow it along for the rest of the movie. It's kind of, it's easy to just not pay attention to it and then like kind of look up and be like, all right, yeah.
And again, if you lose the plot, it doesn't really matter. Oh, nope. You did something else, you come back. There's 2 Jet Lis.
Yeah, exactly.
So 3.5 for me. And so I know we've mentioned a lot of movies in here, but Seamus, do you have any one kind of recommendation based on this movie?
So a recommendation based, just one movie based on the one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I'm going to give a kind of vague one. I feel like there's like 13 Days or what was the, yeah, is it 13 Days the one where Arnold Schwarzenegger is
the sixth day. Yeah.
The sixth day. That's what I'm thinking of. Like, I feel like that's kind of the same vibe, or as we kind of mentioned earlier, like Twin Dragons, Double like those, if you want to just do some more like fun, twinny action hero stuff. But otherwise for some reason, I really want to recommend the Legend of Riccio. Like, if you want to talk about a movie that's just absurd and weird and doesn't take itself serious at all, I mean, it is significantly more over the top, very bloody, completely ridiculous. It resembles this plot in no way at all. It's just sort of martial arts. But for some reason, that's the movie I'm thinking of, is Ricky O.
Yeah.
I love Ricky O.
Great.
Randy, what do you got for this one?
Well, I think everybody should definitely watch the two movies that this most is ripping off, which is Time Cop and Highlander, of course. But I'm going to recommend, based on this, a movie I was thinking about watching it while watching it, is Source Code.
Oh.
Oh.
Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't. That's Duncan Jones.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
Yes, Jake Gyllenhaal. And he's like on a train headed into Chicago that blows up in a terrorist attack. And basically he lives through 5 minutes of that, like until the explosion, over and over until he can solve like who did it, where the bomb is, why it happened and stuff. And it's awesome. It's just like, it's a really like, I mean, it's like dumb as hell, but it's like 85 minutes or 90 minutes or something. It has an amazing cast. It's one of those movies. It's like this where it sets up its rules and then just rolls with it. Mm-hmm. But it goes even further. It's better than this, but you know, it's you know, good in the same
way. And it hits you with
good.
And it hits you with that existential dread.
Yeah.
Too.
Indeed.
Okay. Yeah, Randy, for my recommendation, you just kind of unlocked something. I was going to make a joke and say The Parent Trap, but you just unlocked, it's another Duncan Jones movie. And your pick, it was his follow-up, and it's, of course, Moon.
Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell.
Went to my high school.
Wonderful movie. I saw it in the theater. I've seen it many times since. It's a very low-key kind of space science fiction movie with Sam Rockwell playing dual roles, and he's fucking great. In that movie,
Moon too.
It's so good. It is so good. And if you've seen Mute, which takes place in the same universe, he shows up as the same character in a scene.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I also wouldn't recommend Mute.
I need to watch it again. It's
weird.
It is weird.
It really falls apart.
Yeah. It's got a little too much going on in it. But it's got like Paul Rudd in it and I need to watch it again.
Paul Rudd and Justin Theroux.
Yeah. Moon, it gets high recommendations from me.
Cool.
Great. That wraps it up for the episode on the one. Seamus, what do you got to plug?
I do a lot of stuff with Super Trash Bro, Super Trash TV. So you can find us on Twitch at Super Trash TV. So twitch.com/SuperTrashTV. We're doing a Monday night D&D stream that I'm on. That's I think 6 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock, or 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern. Then we do like we'll play Smash Brothers on Tuesdays, Wednesdays is random stuff, Thursdays is random stuff. Just check us out, follow us on social media and stuff like that. We'll post about it. We also have started doing live shows again. So if you're in Brooklyn, the first Tuesday of every month, we do a live Super Smash Brothers tournament at Dromedary Urban Tiki Bar. A lot of fun. It's free. We give out prizes. Other than that, you can find me on the internet at linkedin.com/Shane Calder. always pushing that, looking for some jobs. Other than that, not a lot going on these days. Just kind of laying low.
Cool. Randy, what you got? What's new?
Oh, not too much. Recording vocals for the Chat Pile album coming soon. Can't wait for that to be out. So people
are
asking us when it's coming out.
Cool.
I don't know. Soon is the answer.
Working on it, man.
We
takes
are.
Time to like, don't push it, man. You like your Chat Pile? You want some shitty, like half-assed Chat Pile? Or you want the full menu?
Exactly.
So for me, normal stuff, Nerd Rage, Great Debates, SupDoc, and Cathode Ray Mission. Check it out wherever you find podcasts. That's it for me. So
hell yeah.
All right, guys, this was great. Seamus, thank you so much for bringing this to us and having us watch it.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you for coming on.
We'll definitely have you back at some point. covering something else. So
we still got to do our Peter Weir podcast, man. So
oh yeah.
Peter Weir podcast.
Will and I used to work together, and we would message each other about Peter Weir films a lot. Mm-hmm. So we were saying we needed to start a podcast where we just talked about his movies.
Yeah,
that'd be fun. I'd like to be on the Last Wave episode.
That's what the podcast is going to be named, The Last Wave.
Oh, for real? Interesting.
Probably. I don't know.
I'm getting weird for Weir.
Oh, yeah. There we go. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Join us again another 2 weeks where we are going to bring another movie that Randy and I and maybe a guest will be watching. So, you know, do all the subscription, you know, leave a comment wherever you listen. Do whatever you can to share the show if you like it. So. Or just let us know that you're listening. You know, that helps as well. So, all right, guys. Take care. Thank you so much. See you next time.
Thank you. See you.